All right, Daryl was a little concerned with my pace that I've got set for us for our amount of time we've got, and I understand his concern. But it's kind of in the plan, but part of this is inexperience too. I know that up front. But yes, my plan is right now we're going kind of slow, kind of getting the idea of how Ezekiel is working and how Ezekiel does his things. But then we will be accelerating and covering a lot more chapters in a chunk as we go forward. We may have one more lesson that only covers two, but then we'll be covering many chapters, a lot more chapters at a time. A lot of them will sum up a lot better. But just as we're getting, we're kind of easing into the shallow end, if that makes sense. And then we'll probably trip and fall into the deep end at some point pretty soon. All right, so I think it is after 9 o'clock. So Aaron was the lucky winner of the microphone this morning, so we will ask him if he will to lead us in prayer.
Our Father in heaven, we bow before you this morning, grateful for this opportunity to gather together on the first day of the week and to worship you. And during this time of study this morning, as we open the book of Ezekiel, we pray that you will help us to listen attentively and to understand what has been written for us, that we might learn from it, and we might desire to make application in our lives now. Help this to increase and grow our faith. And Father, we pray that we'll do things all things in a way that is pleasing to you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
All right, thank you, Aaron. All right, so let's take a quick review from last week. First, let's get our dates, just a reminder of the dates in case you need those, of kind of the important key events that affect what we're covering in the book. And then, of course, our themes that we've got going on, the very high-level outline of the book. Of course, we are still in the first section of Ezekiel talking about the upcoming fall of Jerusalem, which we will get into today a good bit. And then, of course, the main thought that keeps getting repeated, God is letting the people know that he is the Lord. And so if it's a lot easier to me if I can figure out the main idea of something and let everything else fit into it and point to that. And I do believe that fits that bill. So now, by way of review of last week, we see Ezekiel, he's approached by the throne of God or the chariot of God, however you want to visualize that. And he is given the assignment of a watchman. And so, as a watchman, your purpose is not to fight the battle. Your goal is not to defeat the enemy or to even defend yourself, really. Your goal is to warn the people. And so God defines that role for Ezekiel. Ezekiel is not there to save Jerusalem. Ezekiel is not there to save Israel. Ezekiel is there to let them know what is happening. And so God lets him know how difficult that this job is going to be because they're stubborn, they're stiff-necked, they're not going to listen. This is going to be extremely difficult. But God lets him know that he's going to strengthen them, he's going to help them. He says, they may be hard-headed, but I'll make your head harder. Okay, he's not saying stubborn there. He's meaning tough. He's going to make you tough. Once that message is there, to make sure we understand, God is letting him know your job is to warn them. It's not your job to make them listen. As long as you're letting them know, you're going to be okay. You've done your job. It's their job to respond. It's your job to let them know. And so once he lets him know what his role is. He is and we kind of had to rush through the last part, but he is then returned, you know, whether he was gone in a vision, however it is, whatever the situation was, he is returned to the people there, to the captives in Babylon, and it says that as he is being brought back, he's angry. Ezekiel is angry because God has told him how stubborn and stiff-necked they are. He's told them, you know, how much they've transgressed. He's told him all these things, and Ezekiel is upset because we know Ezekiel to be an upstanding, God-fearing person, and so he is upset with his people, and he's emotional. And so when he gets back, remember, he's been so amazed by what he's seen, and he's so angered, he's just astonished. He sits astonished for 7 days. It takes him a week to just even recover from what he has seen and what he has heard, and is just, he's done, the kind of way we say things, is like, I'm done. You know, he's just kind of done for a week. And so he has to sit and just and chill out for a little while to get back to recover from what he's been seeing. And so after the 7 days, God tells him, you need to go. You're bound to your house. You don't need to be saying anything. I need you to be quiet. He says, I'll stick your tongue to the roof of your mouth. You are not to speak to the people. And we'll talk about that a little bit more today. But I'm not going to say that I understand God's reasoning, but it could be that, you know, Ezekiel's pretty emotional. And God's got a lot more to tell him. So he don't have the whole picture. And so God's wanting him to stay silent. He's wanting him to hold his tongue. He's wanting him to stay to himself until he has the whole picture and until God tells him what he is to say. He don't want Ezekiel going out on his own and telling the people what he thinks. And so he's held to silence for the time being. And so that is kind of where we leave Ezekiel at the end of our lesson last week. And we had to rush toward the end there. This seems to be the way it is. So any thoughts or questions on chapters 2 and 3 before we kind of go over the questions? All right. I'll take silence as complete understanding, and we will go forward into the questions. All right, so questions from lesson 3, covering chapters 2 and 3. And thanks to Cheryl's fine memory and record keeping, we know that the question, we will start with her this morning with question number 1, and get them up on the screen. There we go. All right, go ahead. Okay, so I committed a heinous crime in my lesson so far. You can't talk about Ezekiel without discussing this phrase. It's just a rule written in there that you have to talk about this phrase, and I failed to do that. Nobody said anything, but it's a self-imposed penalty. But so I won't take just a second. I don't want to go too far in it. But Son of Man is... This book is riddled with this phrase, 93 times in the King James Version. I admit I did not check every single one to make sure we were talking about Ezekiel, but every one I checked was definitely talking about Ezekiel. And so, but whatever the case, this phrase is used to refer to Ezekiel throughout the book numerous times. And I don't know that it's beneficial to spend just a boo-koodle of time on this phrase, but I do think it is referring to the humanity of Ezekiel as compared to the deity of God. And I almost view it as a term of endearment, almost like a commanding officer would talk to a subordinate as soldier. So it's like God's just, you know, man, or if I would be talking to my dog, I would say, hey, puppy, come here, you know, or something like that. You know, not quite the same, but just saying a term of endearment, letting him know, I care about you, but you're well beneath me. Does that make sense? So I think that's kind of where we're going there. And I looked at the phrase as it refers to when Jesus refers to himself there. I struggled to find much of a correlation. There may be some folks that can find a good correlation there. I kind of struggle to find the correlation there. But other than the fact they were both going to a rebellious nation and they were both prophets, I do see the term. The term does seem to be applied to prophets more often than not. And of course, Ezekiel served the role as a prophet, and Jesus definitely served the role as a prophet and much more as well. But anyway, that being said, that's kind of my thoughts that I have on the phrase. I'll open it up in case anybody has any thoughts or comments on it. Questions may not do you much good with me, but you're welcome to it. Go ahead, Cheryl. Yeah, and yeah, I'm glad you said that because I do feel like I made it sound a little more flippant than I meant to. But yeah, there's a relationship. Yes, I think there's a relationship being specified there, in that a servant would definitely be an aspect of that. So yeah, I appreciate that thought. Anybody else? Before we move on, go ahead, Leon. Yeah, and so in case those listening couldn't hear Leon, he was saying that that here we have the example of the phrase not necessarily being messianic, but it has its terms here in the Old Testament as well. I noticed that in the little bit of research I did, where it was used a lot in other places as man and the Son of Man, just like I'm neither a prophet nor a son of a prophet, kind of that same idea there. Kind of in Jewish poetry, they use that a lot for completeness, and yeah, they're getting the repetition in and using a different phrase to say the same thing twice and repeat. Yeah, so yes, I think that kind of sums up anything I had to say on it anyway. All right, anything else before we go on to the next question? All right, number three. Or two, sorry. Bill, you answered one already, so we're back to Aaron and Laurie. Okay, that's right. All right, number three. Okay, keep that phrase in mind, especially today as we go through our lesson. Number four. Okay, all right. And, number five. Okay. Number six. That's a classic yes, but response, isn't it? Yeah, they will understand, but they will not necessarily want to understand. All right, number seven. Right, right. And so he told him it'd be tough, but he would give him he would take all the excuses away, and kind of mindful of Moses when he was given his mission, right? Every excuse Moses came up with, God was saying, nah, I'll take care of that. It's all right. All right, number eight. Okay, so I can't say that that's ever happened to me, that I've been astonished to nothing for 7 days. but it happened to Ezekiel, and of course I don't think I've ever seen the war chariot of the Lord in front of me either. So, all right, let's see, number nine. That's right. He was there to provide the warning. He was the watchman of Israel. All right, number 10.
What would make Ezekiel as guilty as Israel if he didn't warn them their evil ways?
That's right. That was the watchman's job. If he didn't do his job, if he didn't tell them, he was just as guilty as they were. All right, and I think number 11 up here to the front, Mr. Graves. All right, his tongue would be bound to the roof of his mouth. All right. So I took a note, and I imagine Cheryl did as well, as where we got to. And so that completes our questions. All right. So now we'll look into today's lesson. All right, so now here we are. We've gotten to chapter 4. We've basically left Ezekiel at home. He's emotional. First of all, he's shocked by what he has seen, and he's upset by what he has been told. And so he's mad. He's sitting in silence, and he's sitting at home. But God is now ready. He has given him all this thing. He's ready to give him his first task as a prophet. All right? So this will be a silent task that he's given. This is going to be a performance message. All right? In other words, he's going to perform an action, and that will represent something. Can y'all think of any other examples of prophets doing this? Getting their message across by some sort of action. Okay, all right, so y'all just studied all of Jeremiah's things that he's done. Anybody else? Can't think of any? What about when Ahijah took the cloth and tore it into 12 strips and took the 10 and handed it to Jeroboam? Remember that? Taking the 10 tribes, giving Jeroboam when he divided the kingdom. You remember Elisha with Jehoash's arrows? Strike the arrows on the ground. And he only did it 3 times. And Elisha got pretty upset, because now you're only going to beat them 3 times, because you only beat the ground 3 times. If you'd done it 6 or 7, we could have wiped them out. And then, of course, probably the most difficult that we know of is, how about Hosea? That was a tough one. He had to marry a wife that he knew would not be faithful to him, to symbolize Israel's unfaithfulness to God. So he may get a medal on that one. So this is not an uncommon way for God to get his message across, is for these prophets to have a performance, for lack of a better term, or some kind of act, or some kind of, well, of course, you know, not necessarily acts, but, you know, things that they did that would make the representation of what God was trying to get across. So this is not something that is new, and it is not the last time that it will be done. So we'll go ahead and go in. I'm going to try to read in bigger chunks. I want to do this as long as I can. As we get further in the book, we're not going to be able to read verses quite as much. So I want to do it while we can. So Aaron, if you don't mind, if you will read verses 1 through 3.
You also, son of man, take a clay tablet and lay it before you and portray on it a city, Jerusalem. Lay siege against it, build a siege wall against it, and heap up a mound against it. Set camps against it also, and place battering rams against it all around. Moreover, take for yourself an iron plate and set it as an iron wall between you and the city. Set your face against it, and it shall be besieged, and you shall lay siege against it. This will be a sign to the house of Israel.
Okay, so it's not perfect, but it's a decent illustration, just simply because I can't draw or anything like that, so I have to rely on others. But just to kind of give you, just put some kind of visual thought in your mind as to what Ezekiel may be trying to portray here. So he gets a tile, a brick, block, tablet, something that he's able to write or draw on. And in some, either by writing it or by drawing a model or something, it makes it very clear that this tile is to represent Jerusalem. Okay, so he puts that down, and then he builds a model of a siege all around it. We've got ramps, we've got the camp of the army itself, we've got battering rams, we've got all these different things that are there that was typical to be used in a siege. And I think everybody knows what a siege is, but just to make sure, you basically locked down a city from the outside to where supplies and things could not get in and out. Supplies and people could not get in and out. And the idea was to hold them there until they ran out of resources and became weak enough to where it would be easy to take them out. And so this is what Ezekiel is setting up and showing them. And the iron plate, I'm not going to say that I know much about it, but that kind of fascinates me, the iron plate that he places. You know, he's got the siege set up, but besides that, he's got an iron plate. And it seems to be like he is representing God's relationship to Jerusalem. And so we have an iron barrier now. This is a completely cutting them off from the help of God at this point. And so he's got that solid barrier between them. And so this is an impenetrable siege. This is not anything that they're going to be able to break. And so this is kind of how he is set up. All right, let's go ahead and get the rest of the picture here, Aaron, with verses 4 through 8.
Lie also on your left side and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it. According to the number of the days that you lie on it, you shall bear their iniquity. For I have laid on you the years of their iniquity, according to the number of the days, 390 days. So you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. And when you have completed them, lie again on your right side, then you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have laid on you a day for each year.
Yes.
Therefore you shall set your face toward the siege of Jerusalem, your arm shall be uncovered, and you shall prophesy against it. And surely I will restrain you so that you cannot turn from one side to another till you have ended the days of your siege.
Okay, so so not only does Ezekiel have to build this model, he has to be part of the model. He has to play a part in this scene. And so he is to lay down on his side, first on the left side, He has to lay down on his side for 390 days, so over a year. Now, whether this is 24/7 for 390 days, I don't know. Maybe so, maybe not. We've got some ideas that maybe that wasn't the case. But whatever the case, we're talking about an intense commitment. So he has to do this every day for a total of 430 days, 390 on one side, 40 on the other. And so, and of course, you know, left brain people like me, they see those numbers and they want to apply those numbers to something. And I did a lot of research, and guys that have a lot more knowledge, a lot smarter than me, say, we don't know. So I'm completely happy to say I don't know. Or satisfied, I shouldn't say happy. But about the only correlation we can find is that 430 was the amount of years that they were enslaved in Egypt. It's kind of a stretch to find a correlation there, but there's the information if you want it. But the one thing I would bring attention to is the fact that you see how much more significant it was with Israel compared to Judah. So, you know, we definitely see the result of Judah's attempts at being a good kingdom at times. We, you know, we did have some good kings in Judah as opposed to with Israel, the whole kingdom, the whole life of the kingdom was spent in rebellion to God. But that being said, this is a long time for Ezekiel to spend out and to do this. And so why, other than, you know, and possibly this number did mean something to the people at the time, we're just not privy to that information. But what else would come about from doing it for this amount of time? Okay, yeah, people would ask questions. But, you know, we're talking about quite a few people here. You give them time to come check it out. You give it time. This was a visual communication. They needed to see it to fully appreciate it. And it would give plenty of time for the people to be able to come see and be like, what is this crazy man trying to accomplish? And so it would get it in their head, and they would see it repeatedly more likely. You know, if this is going on for well over a year, you know, they're going to have a chance to see this. It's going to be in their eyes. It's going to be in their minds. And so this amount of time gives them plenty of time to get that digested, or at least to get it in their mind and get it marinating. So there he is. He's on his side. He's doing this performance. Now, I don't know. It said a little earlier he was bound to his house. So I'm not sure if this is taking place in his house or if it's kind of more out in the street type situation. But whatever the case is, people are able to see it because he says this is a sign to them. They are, you know, the purpose of this is for them to see it and to understand it. And as we'll know later, the elders come to his house as seems like maybe a regular basis. But whatever the case is, he is doing this in a place that is able to be seen. All right. Any other thoughts before we kind of move on to the other parts of this? Yeah, I think we kind of forget that part sometimes. God's not just teaching the people, he's teaching the prophet too. I've figured out that I'm not a very good salesman, but I do a whole lot better when I understand the product and I believe in the product. And so, you know, I'll never be a top salesman or anything like that. But when I believe in a product, I can talk about it. I can talk about it passionately, and I can at least relay the message. I can be a lot more effective than if I don't, if it's just something you've told me and I need to go tell somebody about. And so I believe, yes, engrossing your messenger in the message, making sure he understands and he's feeling the emotions of the message, makes him a much more efficient teacher. Somebody raise their hand. Keith. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in just a second, but just remember that phrase from our questions a while ago. They will know a prophet has been among them. So just hold that thought in your mind.
And whether it is continuous or not, we have to also understand he's in captivity.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend that I know exactly how they used captives, but they definitely seem to have their own community and some level of freedom at on some level. So they probably just, you know, if there was any Babylonian presence in that community, it was, they're like, crazy Hebrew over there. I don't know what to do with him. Just let him do his thing. But anyway, all right, let's complete this act here. So Aaron, if you will read 9 through 15.
Okay. Also take for yourself wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, spelt. Put them into one vessel and make bread of them for yourself. During the number of days that you lie on your side, 390 days, you shall eat it. And your food which you eat shall be by weight 20 shekels a day. From time to time you shall eat it. You shall also drink water by the measure, 1/6 of a hin. From time to time you shall drink, and you shall eat it as barley cakes, and bake it using fuel of human waste in their sight. Then the Lord said, so shall the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, where I will drive them. So I said, ah, Lord God, indeed, I have never defiled myself from my youth till now. I have never eaten what died of itself or was torn by beasts, nor has abominable flesh ever come into my mouth. Then he said to me, see, I am giving you cow dung instead of human waste, and you shall prepare your bread over it.
Okay, so if laying on your side for 430 days is not strange enough, then now we're going to really turn up the dial, right? So Ezekiel is giving a diet, and this is a siege-type ration. And we know that because, you know, I don't know how much they used wheat as we think of wheat, but, you know, barley and different things like that. There was not going to be enough of their normal grains to make proper bread. And so you have to put these other things in. I don't think lentils is a normal thing you would put into bread. But you get all these other things that you're having to combine just to make bread. And so, and we're talking about 8 ounces of bread a day. We're talking about roughly somewhere around the neighborhood of a pint, maybe to, you know, somewhere between a pint and a quart of water a day. Then this is your diet. This is what you are to live on for 430 days. And of course, that's not the length of time of the siege. You know, we'll talk about that too. But yeah, he's given a siege rations. This is not something that's going to make him look like me, okay? He is going to waste away on this diet. They are going to be able to visually see him waste away as he's partaking of this diet. And so So that's kind of what we're talking about there, the scarcity that it was going to be represented. But now also we come about the fuel of the fire. So he is told to burn human waste in order to fuel the fire to cook the food. And of course, Ezekiel is horrified by this. And it doesn't seem to have anything to do with just being gross. He seems to have a real purity issue with it, a sincere, I don't want to defile myself. You know, remember, what has he been trained as his entire life? A priest. So purity has been, I mean, more than normal pounded into him. And so this is what horrifies him, and God, of course, is sensitive to that and relents and backs off and says, okay, I respect that. I'll let you do it with cow waste. And so, and which we know is actually a pretty decent fuel from fire. It's been used throughout history as a fuel source, cow and buffalo and different things like that. It's not exactly what I would pick, but when you're in survival mode, you'll do what you need to do. But I think the idea of God asking him to use human waste has to do with the fact that if there was any animal waste around, well, we might not be so dire. There's no animals left. There's nothing producing this except for humans. So that's how bad we are. That's how bad this situation is going to get. And I think that's what God is trying to get to it. I think Ezekiel's objection is kind of coming from the ideas. We don't have time to go there, but from the thoughts in Deuteronomy chapter 23, where it deals about the handling of waste, as well as, or how it is to be dealt with, as well as Leviticus 7, where it talks about clean touching human uncleanness. And there may be some more references that can be made, but just for time's sake, we'll move on from there. But whatever the case was, Ezekiel was not comfortable with using that as his fuel. Real quickly, yeah, go ahead, Bill. Yes, and you know, it seemed to be, I don't think I can add to that, but yeah, it's very interesting that how God will relent to heartfelt appeal at times, and sometimes it's pretty significant, such as I'm going to destroy this people, and Moses says, please don't, and he relents. And so, it's interesting when man is able to influence God's decision. I mean, you get an idea of his love and his care for mankind when he does that. Okay, let's finish that chapter real quick, Aaron, with 16 and 17.
Moreover, he said to me, Son of man, surely I will cut off the supply of bread in Jerusalem. They shall eat bread by weight and with anxiety, and shall drink water by measure and with dread, that they may lack bread and water and be dismayed with one another and waste away because of their iniquity.
Okay, so this one thing I appreciate about at least parts of Ezekiel. He interprets it for you. He lets you know exactly what he's talking about and lets you know exactly what he's trying to say. And so that's what God is saying. He says, I'm cutting off. You're going to be struggling. Or Jerusalem is going to be struggling, and they're going to have a hard time with this. All right, so let's quickly look at chapter 5. I do think we can cover it. May not do it justice, but we can at least get through it pretty quickly. I don't think we'll have time to read it, but so we see what's going to happen to Jerusalem. And so now in chapter 5, God's going to be addressing what's going to happen to the people a little bit more specifically there. With what's going on. And so in verse 2, he mentions that when the days of the siege are finished. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm taking that to mean when you get your 430 days done, now do this. You know, so I've given you a task for this. When it gets done, when this siege is done, this is the next thing I want you to do. This is the next part of the sign. And so Ezekiel is told to shave off all his hair, all of his beard, and divide it into three, actually weigh it out to get it divided up. And so what's the significance of a priest shaving his head? That's right. And so that gets mentioned in Leviticus chapter 21, that a priest is not to make his head bald with a razor. And so that was, so that, Ezekiel just keeps getting tested here. I don't want to say tested, but he's having to do difficult things that he's always been trained to not be favorable toward. So this is a, and remember the example of when Ammon, the king of Ammon, shaved half of David's men's beard. That was pure shame. So this is just adding a little bit more to the difficulty to Ezekiel here. This was a sign of shame when that your head, your hair and your beard was shaven. Now, just naturally bald, that wasn't a big deal, but actually shaving it, that was a problem. And so that is kind of what gets discussed there. He weighs it he splits it into three different groups, and three different things happen to those groups. So we've got a third that goes into the fire, right? And then he takes a third and chops it up with a sword, right? And then what happens with the third? Scattered to the wind. But he grabs a few, puts them in his coat, right? And then a little bit later, he actually takes a few of those out and throws them in the fire. And so, fortunately, God tells us exactly. I mean, it's pretty easy to see the parallel now looking back on it from our viewpoint. But God does go ahead and tell us what happens. You know, a third will be killed immediately. A third will be killed with a sword. And then, a third will be burned up in pestilence and famine. A third will be killed with a sword. And then a third will be scattered. And then I have this small little remnant. I think he's talking about the inhabitants of Jerusalem, not necessarily Israel as a whole. But you'll have a little bit of remnant. Some of those will be killed. And then he doesn't really discuss what happens with the rest that gets stayed. But we see that as those that might be spared. And so now, to kind of rush forward with verses 5 through 12, a couple things I really wanted to point out here. In verse 8, he says, God says the words, "I am against you." And this should put shivers down their spines when they hear these words. When these words are, anytime those words are told to you by God, "I am against you." If that don't get to you, then you need to check your pulse. When the most powerful being on the planet, or not the planet, the most powerful being in existence tells you, "I am against you," it's time to be scared. And then, real quick, I did want to bring this up in verse 9. He says, and I'm summing it up, he says, "I have never and will never bring about something like this." And he mentions specifically about the father eating the son, son eating the father, you know, the cannibalism that would go on in a siege. And so, it came to my mind about the Roman siege. You know, we have records of this happening in the Roman siege. And so you're like, "Well, God said he would never do it again." Well, you got to remember, the Roman siege, it only lasted like 5 months before they came in and took care of business. This siege lasted at a minimum 18 months, at a minimum. It could have been longer than that, but at a minimum. And so things were going to be getting a lot worse in this. So we may not have been referring specifically to that cannibalism that was there, but he says, "I'm never going to bring the devastation that I brought here." And so I just wanted to point that out. And then the rest of the chapter, God is just letting them know that his judgment is complete. He's not holding back. He's unleashing everything, and everything's going to be done, and it's not going to be pretty. So, all right. Well, I appreciate y'all letting me rush through the end there.